Chapter 12. Ronnie, the Beach. He stands on the other side of the counter, smiling down at us crouched in the sand. His stupid cocktails are sitting on the bar, and if he's not careful, I'll throw one in his face. He grins. "Well, Ronnie, at least you made it to Friday, girl." "Cheeky bastard." I rush to my feet. "He's getting it now." The old woman stays on her knees, but Nikki leaps up and tugs my arm. "Please, Ronnie, don't do anything mad. I need to find out what happened after the casino, and I want to see Gio again."
"My father died. It was Charles who saved me," the old woman says. "We shared our grief. But what happened next?"
They're both looking at me with tears in their eyes, as if I'm the bad guy. As if all of this is normal, and I'm spoiling their fun. The slap of the waves on the sand is like the tapping of a branch on your window late at night, when the wind is high. It makes me grit my teeth. Will it never end? I shrug Nikki off, walk over to the bar, and let my fingertips trail along the rough driftwood surface. He leans forward, and I smell the cheap pomade in his black curls. I pick up a glass. "What the fuck is going on? And you better have an answer, or I'm going to do some serious damage." I smash the glass against the wooden edge of the bar. Mrs. Hawthorne jumps up and grabs my wrist. "Don't you dare," she hisses. I'm not sure whether it's the shock of her sudden appearance or the strength of her grip, but I step back and drop the glass.
"What kind of person are you?" she says. "I've just remembered my father died, lived through all the grief again, and you haven't even asked me how I am. And as for Operation Snare Him, he told you he'd never love you, and all you can think of is how to change his mind. You and your hot date with cold ice cream. It's pathetic. You're lying to yourself. But Nikki and I had real lives. She had Giovanni, and I had my Charles. And you're not going to stop us from finding out what happened." I want to retort, but she's right. Nikki has found someone who loves her, who showers her in money, and the life ahead together looks sunny. And Mrs. Hawthorne has found solace in her darkest hour. When all seemed lost, there was Charles, with his silly picnic. Do I have the right to deny them? The gatekeeper steps round the counter. "Fear not, ladies. Our stories will unfold. Indeed, in this place." He spins around, his open arms taking in the sea and the beach and his ramshackle shack and the three of us. "It's memory that binds humans together." We back away from him, and our hands find each other. "I'll tell you a little story," he says. "Once upon a time, there was a woman, April, locked up in a medical institute. She'd been in a terrible car crash and had suffered horrific head injuries. All her memories were erased. She couldn't even recognize her own face." He stops and takes a slug of rum and coconut from one of the two remaining glasses. "Each morning, when April got out of her bed, she'd no idea where she was or who she was. When she walked to the toilet, she had to navigate her way by following the hospital signs. But one morning, having done that once, the next time, she remembered how to get there in the afternoon." He twirls the ice around in his drink. "Imagine April's relief. Her memories were coming back. At the doctor's urging, she'd begun a diary, and on that day, she triumphantly entered, "At last, I have begun to live again." Mrs. Hawthorne's fingers curl tightly around my palm, and Nikki shakes. And so, she approached the doctors, demanding release. And her physician merely smiled sadly at her. "Turn the pages," he said. And so, April flicked through the pages of her diary to the previous day, the day before that, and the day before that. It went on for hundreds of pages, and on each page, in her own handwriting, was the phrase, "At last, I have begun to live again." The gatekeeper tilts his head back and swallows the last of his drink through tight lips. His eyes are crinkled at the side, as if it's all a big joke and he's keeping his laughter hostage. "It's my decision that you'll be like April. You'll remember precisely what I give you to remember. We'll focus on those memories that you call love and the feelings you experience in that moment of time. What better way to get to know our little group of ladies without the distractions of others?" "What the fuck do you want from us?" My hands shake as much as Nikki's, and my legs are weak. What if I don't like what I find? What if Graham is a liar, a user, just like all the others? What if everything is a waste of time? What if there is no love? What will happen to me then? Will I stay here forever, trapped by the waves? He smiles again, like a snake slithering its tongue out, testing the air. "Why, Ronnie? What else? We need to know what happens to our Friday girl." And with that, the memories crash over me. Chapter 13. Ronnie. Liverpool. A toothbrush. So innocuous, yet symbolic when next to his on the bathroom shelf. I'd forgotten to take it home, so I could check the next time I visited that it was still on display. And now, after a few weeks, it's claimed permanent residence. Does he have a hidden cupboard somewhere with a huge box of them, all branded different girls' names? I slosh my mouth clean and make a note to check the house next time he's out. He steps out of the shower, drenched in the scent of vanilla rose. "Ronnie, I love the new body buff."
"Told ya. I'll get some more next time I'm in boots."
He flutters small kisses on the back of my neck, and I grab a dressing gown from the hot towel rail we'd installed last week. A few months have passed and we've slipped into a semblance of normality. Clubbing, shopping, cuddling in bed, kissing and watching old films. We often discuss school strategies over a Chardonnay, his intelligence spellbinding and his astuteness making me hot. And day by day, piece by piece, I'm moving in, cementing my rank, creating bonds and securing my place in his life. Exhibit D, new mattress from John Lewis. We shopped for it last Saturday, amongst all the other happy couples starting a new life. We'd laughed and laid down, testing them out like they do in those TV rom-coms. Normally, of course, I'd be strutting through, sulking at anyone who dared come near. But this was fun me, happy me, perfect girlfriend. Exhibit E. Hairspray, hairbrush and a box of tampons in the bathroom cabinet. If any other woman sees them, they'll understand this is someone else's territory. Exhibit F. A range of silk chemises and knickers that lie folded in a bag under a bedroom chair. The pile is growing, and soon I'll have to offer a small drawer. He said he'd never live with a woman again, but here I am, becoming more visible every day.
He preens and primps in front of a freestanding mirror. Black tight polo, black jeans, his pulling outfit. He's off out on the hunt with his shady little bastard best pal. How do I look?
Gorgeous, as always, I reply. It isn't a lie.
It's Saturday night. I've moved up rank again. But there's a test I'm not sure I'll pass. And he's so happy, so excited and oblivious to my pain. But why would he notice?
It's me who designed it. To prove my worth. To prove I'm different. All part of the snare him plan.
I sink back into satin pillows with my new book and hot chocolate by my side. He leans down and I kiss him goodbye. I keep my voice light, and as he bounces down the stairs, I shout, "Have fun, babe. Go do your thing."
"Thanks, honey. I'll try not to wake you when I get home."
The door slams. I must be mad. Throwing the book across the room and stomping downstairs, I grab a bottle of vodka from the freezer. Graham can go fuck his hot chocolate. It'll probably be the only thing he doesn't fuck tonight. How will I get through the next few hours? The pain burns my stomach. How can he leave me like this? In his own home, under the blankets with a book, while he goes out on the hunt? Dirty rat. But it had been my idea.
Earlier, over breakfast, Graham had gone on and on about how much he liked me. And to be fair, he showed it in every way he could. Flowers, cooking us dinner, asking me to stay over more and more. Except for one thing. He didn't want a relationship and wanted to still play the field. Bastard. So I'd said, "Graham, I'm not a jealous person. I don't care if you have sex with someone else. I know that's all it is. Just sex. It's not what we have."
He jumped on that, nodding. "Yes, yes.
But I hate lies. I hate deceit. You must be honest about it. No cheating behind my back."
Another nod. And to prove my point, and to become his one and only Saturday girl, I'd scaled up the game.
"In fact, Graham, there's no need for me to go home today. I'll stay over. But you go out. Do your thing as usual. I'll relax and see you when you get home."
His mouth shot open, but after further discussion, we agreed. This is why at 1 in the morning, I'm on the kitchen floor, drinking iced vodka and obsessing. I can't get my head free from him. Is he dancing? Or is he already fucking someone? Is she better than me? Younger and firmer? Maybe kinkier? Oh, she'll have a better ass. He's an ass man after all. I rub my hand along my own ass cheeks, disgusted at how flabby they are. Maybe I'll disguise myself and go to the club and spy on him. Why am I doing it? Am I challenging myself? Seeing how far I can go? Because I can't have meant those words. The pain is too fierce. I could walk out, but then we'd be over. It would all have been for nothing. But how can he hurt me like this? I'd told him it was okay. I'd given the green light. And men, they hear what they want to. I return the vodka and grab a can of soda. Being drunk isn't going to help. I have to make sure I play the role when he gets back. I have to do that sober. 6 a.m. He gently slides into bed, carefully lifting the blankets so as not to wake me. But I sense every move. I've been looking from behind the curtains to see who drops him off. I do that yawn thing to show I'm not fully asleep and curl towards his treacherous body. He smells of lemons, the vanilla rose sullied then showered away. Like a child, he'll need to be forgiven. I lay my hand on his chest. "Hey," I say. He wraps me in his arms and his tears feed the drought of my emotion. I have to stand fast. It's okay, I laugh. You haven't done anything wrong.
I fucked someone tonight. She gave me a blowjob in the taxi. Then I stayed up all night screwing her. I didn't think of you once, Ronnie. Until now.
I want to punch his fucking face in. Or take a knife and cut off his dick. I want to hunt down the girl, feed her it, and watch her choke on her greed. That's what you went out to do, babe. Good for you. And you're home now. None of it matters.
He shrugs off my embrace and lies flat on his back. His eyes stray to the window and the flickering street lamp.
My wife and I, we got divorced. And it was all my fault.
Just nod, Ronnie. Don't speak. Don't say what you really feel.
I had an affair.
No surprise there.
We met when we were 14, still at school, really naive. Neither of us had even been kissed before.
Well, you sure as fuck are making up for it now.
We got married, both of us virgins at 18. I wanted to be the perfect husband. She deserved that.
But you couldn't keep your dick in your pants, right?
But then I made new friends at university and started clubbing. At first, it was just for the dancing. But suddenly, I saw this new world and I let temptation in.
Shut up, Ronnie. Don't talk. This is important. This is ammunition.
My wife saw sex as a means of procreation. It was never for pleasure and had to be done efficiently. Masturbation was a sin. They said it could lead to homosexuality. And I'd been caught a few times. She reported me to the elders and my parents.
What the fuck? I clasp a hand over my mouth to keep my words in.
It was embarrassing to be chastised in front of everyone. My whole community was disgusted. But then I made matters worse by having a few flings. A one-off might have been forgiven, but I couldn't stop.
He swallows hard. I place a hand gently on his thigh and wait.
I was shunned, excommunicated. My wife divorced me and the whole church turned their back. It's not a religion like yours, Ronnie. It's nothing like being a Catholic. It's a cult. Even now, no one speaks to me, except my mother. And that's in secret. I no longer exist.
His voice breaks.
The shame of that never leaves me. So you see, Ronnie, if I couldn't do it for my wife and my parents, I'll never do it for you. And I care so much about you that I don't want to hurt you.
I pull him into my arms. What a horrific weight to carry. And I get it. The years we all spend fucking around, experimenting, trying things out. He never had that. And he wants it now. But he can't take any more blame. No matter what he feels for me. I'm going to say something, Graham, and I don't want you to reply. Don't talk, okay? His body tenses. I love you. I silence him with a kiss. He crumples into my arms. But do I really? Or do I just want to win? Any normal woman would just walk away.
But I'm not just any woman.
I can do this.
Just not this way.
I can't be oblivious to all the facts. I must find a way to take control. Chapter 14. Nicky. Blackpool. Sweat drips from Gio's brow and he wipes it along his shirt sleeve. It's disgusting. I can't be arsed with it anymore.
I sit down on the carpet and burst into tears. After a minute or so, I look up through my lashes to see his reaction, but he hasn't even noticed, so I cry even more. 4 hours of hell, and I'm exhausted with it all, and minute by minute, our savings are slipping away. I hate the police, and I hate Gio. His stupid dreams and big ideas mean nothing at all. The casino isn't glamorous and fancy. Well, the free drinks are. When I found out you didn't have to pee, I regretted not ordering something expensive. And guess what? You get fancy meals too. Proper meals made by chefs. But the rest of it? Nope. Not fancy or glamorous at all. It's all dingy and stinks of damp desperation. The freebies are to keep you there and disguise all the squalor. If you leave for a drink or something to eat, you might not come back, and they can't have that. I get up from the floor and slump into a red velvet chair. There's no point putting on a show when he doesn't care. A woman glances over with sympathetic eyes. "Are you okay?" she asks in a hoity-toity voice. "Obviously not, but it isn't her fault, and she probably feels as bad as me. Like Gio, her guy is probably slouched over blackjack too. Yeah, I'm just a bit fed up. It's boring." She laughs and sips a glass of wine. I change my opinion of her immediately. "I don't see what's funny, actually."
"Oh, doll, you've got a lot to learn. I guess it's your first time."
I should tell her no, that she's got a bloody cheek. But then she might ask me questions to see if I'm lying. And I really don't have a clue. So I tell her the truth. "Yeah, it's my first and last time. I'll never come back." She nods like I've said something really good, and I'm glad I've not lied.
"What happened then? The guy you're with seems to be losing a lot at the tables."
A huge sob lodges in the back of my throat. I gulp it down. "Yeah, he's an idiot. He's been playing for hours and losing all night. I don't think he has anything left."
The woman clicks her fingers towards a nearby server and grabs two champagnes. She offers me one. I don't fancy it and screw up my face.
"It's just cheap fizz, but it's nice. Go on. It'll cheer you up a bit,"
she coaxes. I smile. "Okay."
"You're young. 18 or 19.
I nod and drink some more. I'm not guessing her age, because under all the makeup I haven't a clue. She could be anything between 40 or 50. I glance over at Gio, but he's oblivious to anything around him, his focus solely on the cards.
"So, do you live with your parents still?"
"No, my mum and dad split up. She's in Scotland, and I moved down here about a year ago. Don't know where my dad is, and I don't care."
Cheers and applause are up from the roulette table, and a bunch of men pat each other on their backs.
"Someone's been lucky," she says.
"I wish it was Gio."
"More champagne?"
She clicks her fingers again. When I look down, I'm shocked my glass is already empty. "Please?"
"So, your guy is good looking."
"Much better than mine."
She points over to a guy in his 70s, bald head, huge stomach, and very short legs. My eyes widen and she smiles.
"As Marilyn Monroe said, don't you know that a man being rich is the same as a woman being pretty?"
I'm not sure what she means, so I giggle and sip my fizz.
"There's no point in you being with that guy if he's skint, you know. You should move on. I could introduce you to a few high rollers."
What is she talking about? So rude. Like I'm going to dump Gio because he's lost. Well, okay, I'm pissed off with him, but it isn't her place to say that. I
stand angrily and she reaches over and places her hand on my wrist.
I'm just saying, doll. You can make a lot more money tonight if you dump him. All the girls do that. The guys sort of expect it. Are you working alone?
Working alone?
Yeah. Some girls try it on their own at first, but you're better off in an agency. I run one, and with your looks, I'd definitely take you on the books.
On her books? Oh, my good God. Is she? And without thinking, I blurt out my granny's old phrase. Are you, a lady of the night? She laughs.
I'm a prostitute, doll. The same as you, only a bit savvier. So, if you want, I'll help you. You could earn a fortune. The old buggers like the young ones.
I splutter and cough, nearly choking on my drink. Could this night get any worse? This place can go to hell, and so can Gio. I was right about him and his prosy friends. I stand and pull my miniskirt down as far as it will go, in case anyone else gets any fancy ideas. Then I head for the door. It's dark outside. I could have sworn it was much earlier. But then, time doesn't exist inside the casino. Why would they want you to see the hours and minutes fritter by? Gio shouts after me, but there's no way I'm letting on. It has been the most shit night of my life. I mean, do I even look like a prostitute? I'll have to check in the mirror when I get home. Bloody bitch. I should have thrown the fizz all over her. Nikki. He can get lost. I run along the pavement. He'll never be able to keep up. Nikki, wait. Nikki, why you run? You think I am the boogie boogie man? I don't want to laugh, but I can't help myself. But I don't slow down. And then, in the middle of the street, he belts out Shirley Bassey's Something in the Way You Move. It makes me laugh even more. And since I'm knackered and out of breath, I slow to a stop and cross my arms. Nikki, I am the crazy man in casino. I know this. Yeah, he sure was. A big sweaty one. But we have fun, yes? You like the food, the drinks, the roulette. Yeah, but I know when to stop. He doesn't. Nikki, why you no talk me? Because you've lost all our money and ruined our dreams for our restaurant? Bella, you hungry? Not going to work, mate. Not this time. He grabs me and tickles me under the arms and blows raspberries against my neck. I'm not a baby. I'm 18. Stop! He leans against the shop wall, head down, shoulders hunched, and runs his hands through his thick black hair. I'm wrong tonight. I let the game put spell on me. I not look after you right way. I sorry. My Bella Nikki. I very sorry. This it not happen again. I glare at him. You ruined our dreams. Why you say this? You spent all our savings, Gio. Everything we worked for. He shakes his head. He's about to cry. But I'm not going to soften. Nikki, come. He takes my arm and we walk silently towards the bus stop opposite the North Pier Promenade. The breeze blasts a chill around us and sweeps old fish and chip wrappers up into the air. The scent of candy floss mingles with the salt of the sea and sticks like glue to my skin. Fastening our jackets tighter around us, we continue upwards until finally Gio stops outside a bank. Here, Nikki, this is savings card. You keep it now. You no trust me. And I no trust me too. This best way. I sorry.
I don't see much point when we're starting from scratch again. But he gives me the PIN number. So I check the balance. The 6,000 is still there, except for £50. I'd been wrong. And it's not all gone. I feel so bad. But I'm keeping the card. We sit together on a low stone wall and gaze out at the sea. The sun is rising, and the first rays of light spin glitter onto the sand. We munch bacon sandwiches and hold hands. He has ketchup and I have brown sauce, but I don't argue about that. Suddenly, he jumps up and twirls me around in the air. Let's buy the buckets and spades, Nikki. Let's make the big sandcastle. I laugh. It's 7 in the morning. He's mad. He kisses my nose and grins. As he sets me back down, I shout, yes, let's. One with turrets and a moat. As we run like kids to the nearest shop, I pat my pocket to check the card. I need to find a good hiding place once we're home. Somewhere far from Geo's eyes.
Chapter 15. Mrs. Hawthorne, Edinburgh. Wild and untamed, the peonies bordering the driveway add a simple grace to the garden. Petals have scattered onto red gravel. I gather some up, cup my hands, and inhale their sweet peppery scent. I've always loved roses. The front door opens, and Charles walks out and ambles over. They're Clarissa's, he says. She planted them when we first moved in. They're quite beautiful, aren't they? Yes, they're gorgeous. But their velvet touch now feels cloying. I clench my hand, crush them, drop them to the ground. While I glance over at the house, Charles fusses with the flowers. I really should get around to putting in some supports for these. Is he also considering his own stooped back? We've been chatting and texting by mobile for a few weeks. Charles's ineptitude and my impatience for him to get it right make us laugh at ourselves. And late into the night, we've cried again and again for our loss. But this is a new step. He'd invited me for dinner, and this is my first time at his home. We're nervous and uncertain of the meaning. The house is a grand affair, secluded behind iron gates, its whitewashed stone walls imposing, and I imagine us being served afternoon tea on the lawn. Charles shifts from foot to foot and makes his way to the door. Please, do come in. The hallway is floored in rich caramel oak, and several rooms branch off from its pale yellow walls. But it's the view to the back garden that captures my heart. The grass, freshly mowed, slopes gently down to a hedge of silver beech and wild cherry trees. Smoke bush, broom and rock rose splash hues of purple and pink in the borders. In a corner, a weeping willow romances an old rustic bench with graceful leaves. How I'd love to sit there, a book in my hand, a glass of wine by my side. My father would have loved it too. What's in there? I ask, pointing to a wooden summer house. That's where I keep the piano. My playing is so dreadfully bad. Clarissa asked me to move it out of her hearing range. Philistine. He laughs. I bet you're not that bad. Can I see? Maybe you could play me a tune. Good grief, no. Even I admit my music is a crime against the arts. Besides, a couple of years ago I found some poor old itinerant had taken up residence and I had to shoo him off, so now I always keep it locked. Sunshine washes the hall with a golden glow
and warm air flows through the open windows. But I shiver, for there's no life in this home. Would you like some tea? In such a grand house, we're in the humblest of rooms. A brown leather sofa, shabby and torn, is cramped against a wall, and opposite, set to the news, an old box television drones along with Jack's snores. Charles strokes his fur, as if he's scared to lose contact, while I perch on the edge of the sofa, looking on. A clock on the fireplace strives to tick the minutes away, but they're sparse. "Oh," Charles says, suddenly remembering he has a guest. "Would you like a tour of the house? That's what one does, doesn't one?" Ghosts cling to motes of dust as if yearning for lost love. Her photographs in gold and silver are everywhere I turn. In the dining room, napkins lemon with age curl next to white china plates. And I can just imagine Clarissa holding court here, the crystal sparkling, as Charles basks in her light. Each reflection of his past shapes his loneliness sharper. Does he live in the television room because he can't bear to see all this? Has he built a refuge there for him and little Jack? I'm suffocated by the desperation in the air. "Charles," I say softly, as if he's made of glass, as if I might break him. He jumps as if he's never heard someone speak here for a very long time. "Why don't we go out to the garden and sit? Come on, it's a gorgeous day. We could take some wine out. Let Jack run around while we chat." Charles almost sprints to the kitchen. "So, tell me something about psychology, Professor." Charles laughs at the use of his title. "It's not something I particularly like talking about. No one says to a particle physicist, 'Hey, tell me something about physics,' because they already know they're not going to understand the answer." I nearly choke on my wine. "Very condescending, Prof. And it's kind of the same for psychologists. For example, you go to the hairdressers and they ask, 'What do you do for a living?' And you say, 'I'm a particle physicist.' And the conversation ends there." "So now hairdressers are dumb." He shakes his head and continues. "No, no. But if you were to answer, 'I'm a psychologist,' they might say, 'Oh, you should come to study us. We're all really mad here.' The problem is, people think they know what psychology is, but they really don't." "Uh-huh." I sip more wine. "And often, the results of psychology are really surprising, which will annoy some people. Let me give you an example." I top up our wine glasses and lean forwards. I love to learn. "So, Harvey Sacks, an influential figure in my field, looked at how we interpret the things people say. One example he was fond of was, 'The baby cried, the mummy picked it up.'" I light two cigarettes and offer him one. He pauses to inhale, then continues. "Now, most people hearing that would automatically assume that the mother who picked the baby up was the mother of the baby."
"Obviously," I reply.
"But there's nothing in that statement to suggest the mummy was the baby's mummy."
"What? That's rubbish. It's implied in what was said."
He laughs. "No, it isn't." Shifting in my chair, I turn closer to him, my voice rising.
"But you said the baby cried and the mummy picked it up."
"No, I didn't put the and in. You did."
He laughs.
"But if he'd said, 'The baby cried, the woman picked it up,'
it would have more credence. It's really stupid. Of course we'd think it's the baby's mother.
Giles slaps his thigh in delight.
As I said, the results of psychology sometimes annoy. And I think you'll find you're annoyed. And on that note, I'll get us more wine.
I think we'll need more than one bottle, Charles. This conversation could take a while.
Charles smiles. I look forward to it.
2 hours later, and we're still arguing about the mummy, and neither of us will concede defeat. I can't remember the last time I've had such fun. We're on our third bottle of wine and eating pizza when he asks if I like music. I do, as long as it isn't jazz, which, of course, turns out to be his favourite. So we compromise and put on some old Sinatra.
Do you miss your career? I ask him.
Not really. I've done everything I set out to do, and the timing was right to retire. But I may write again for journals.
Being a professor of psychology, every stereotype fits Charles to a T. But the bumbling, old-fashioned exterior hides a sharp wit that charms.
Do you miss yours?
He asks.
Yes, every day. I may go back.
He nods, reaches out and holds my hand, and as the music floats around the garden, we lose ourselves in our thoughts. Crimson streaks smeared with mauve and plum darken the sky. Splashes of colour, painted by hidden lights, shimmer from shrubs into the night. We could be anywhere in the world. Charles stands.
I don't dance normally, but this seems the perfect time to start.
He bows and holds out his hand. I curtsy and fold into him, as if it's the most natural thing. And as we waltz on the lawn with uneven steps, the world is a softer place, less harsh, less cruel.
You've saved my life,
he whispers, before lifting my hand to his lips. An old familiar feeling awakens inside me. It both terrifies and excites me. Will he save mine too?
Chapter 16. Ronnie, Liverpool. Strolling along the corridor, Mrs. Wilson from the maths department scuttles towards me. Her brows are furrowed and she fidgets with a pen in her hand.
Miss, sorry to bother you, but there's a fight in the downstairs loo. We think it's Shannon and Donna up to their usual tricks.
Sighing, I twist my head away from her, lick chocolate from my lips, and slip my Mars bar into my jacket pocket. There's never any time to sit down and eat in school. Even snatched moments of pleasure get ruined. Can't you deal with it? I'm about to go into the English department.
She lifts her pen to her lips and chews. But there's a gang of girls guarding the entrance, and I can't get in.
If she can't control a gaggle of year nines, she won't last long in her new role, which means human resources, supply teachers and behaviour problems. I force a smile. Okay, I'm on my way. She scarpers back down the stairway like a frightened little mouse. Resisting the urge to creep up behind her and shout, boo, I follow her down. As I turn the corner, the girls flee like it's chip day in the canteen.
Get straight back to lessons,
I shout.
We'll deal with this later.
Shannon and Donna are arguing over a boy, as usual. I can't bear to go into the details. I give them detentions, then stride back to English. 2 more hours until lunch drinks with Tara, and I'm counting the seconds. The pub is one of those chain types with jugs of watered-down cocktails. You'll still get pissed if you drink enough,
but you'll spend all night in the loo. It's busy, but then a carvery always attracts fools. I order orange juice and lemonade, although I'd love a double vodka and lime. But there could be parents here, and they'd use it as ammunition if we ever had a confrontation. I spy Tara's blonde bouncy curls, grab my drink and walk over. It's been way too long since I last saw her. Hey, Ronnie, how you doing? We hug, but only because it's expected. I'm not really into all that kissing and touching stuff. How's hubby? I ask, hating myself for the abbreviation. He's as boring as ever. Let's not waste time talking about him. We clink our glasses together and giggle. I met Tara in a previous school. She taught art, but she's left teaching now. We hit it off immediately, due to our fascination with hangover cures and a shared history of arsehole boyfriends. So, what have you been up to? How are things with you and Graham? She asks. School's great. I love being the boss. She throws her head back, curls flying wild, and laughs. It's such a great noise, loud and in your face. Tara doesn't give a fuck about appearances. And Graham? Yeah, it's going great. He's gorgeous and so clever. We chat about everything. That's fab. About time you had some luck. You've had some right nutters in the past. Remember that drummer guy's wife who turned up at his gig, accusing you of being a homewrecker? Yeah, he told me she died in childbirth. We both sigh and say at the same time, lying bastard. Especially because I only fucked him because I felt sorry for him. I don't suppose he cared much about why, Ronnie. Our laughter brings tears to my eyes. A pack of men suited and booted at the bar, drinking trendy bottled beer, tut in our direction. The smallest one, covered in acne, tries to act big. Quiet down, ladies, please. We're trying to watch the races. Get to fuck! Tara shouts in her upper-class accent, and a couple of women at a nearby table applaud her. The pack shake their heads, turn their backs and whisper to each other, like old mother hens. What about that guy you dated who worked on the oil rigs? He was away 2 weeks at a time. Tommy? Timmy. We never saw that coming, did we? She says. Nope. And neither did his pregnant girlfriend when we tracked him down to her house. Another lying bastard. Tara sips some of her spritzer, then smiles. Yeah, maybe a boring husband isn't so bad after all. I nod, although I don't quite believe it. I'm going to have to go soon, Tara. I've a meeting at 2:30. Her mouth transforms into a pout, but she quickly recovers it. That's okay. But since we haven't had much of a catch-up, what about meeting up after school for dinner? I really do need to make more of an effort to see her, but there's always something standing in the way. Sorry, I need to go shopping after school. It's Graham's birthday tonight, and I haven't bought him anything yet. Oh, what are you getting him? I'm not sure, to be honest. Like most men, he's hard to buy for. I did have one idea, but then I thought better of it. What was it? I lower my voice and lean in closer to her. Well, don't be shocked, but I wanted to get him a threesome. Another man? Nah, a woman. But I'll do it, Ron. She purrs. What the absolute fuck? I was about to say I'd changed my mind, that I'd never been with a woman before and wouldn't have a clue. Unless you don't want me to, of course. The pout is back. I've this don't-give-a-fuck attitude to keep up. If I back down, I'll look like an idiot. And she's sitting there, so excited. Excited to fuck Graham? Is a life that boring? A queasiness builds within me, a pressure on the nerve of our friendship. If I say no, she might be offended. But since this is part of planned snare him and since she's offering, fuck it. Wow. Yeah.
course. That'd be great. Come around to the house at 7, and I'll tell him his birthday present is waiting at the front door.
She throws her palm up in the air and, like a teenage boy or someone who has lost their mind, says, "High five!" I jump back and nearly fall off my chair. "Come on, Ron. High five!"
She giggles. Flushing with embarrassment, I lift my hand and gently tap back. She squeals in delight. What the fuck have I done? The candles are lit. The bubbles are on ice, and I've showered twice. I've never thought about sleeping with a woman before, and I'm not sure I can pull it off. After school, I phone my old friend Liz for advice. She's been married to her wife for 7 years. She'd laughed. "Just do what you like done to yourself, Ronnie, and enjoy." But this is for Graham, not me. Another experience. A new way to capture his devotion. I only wish I was more confident in the scenario, knew my script and had rehearsed all my lines. I pop open some fizz. Pacing the room, I drink straight from the bottle, as if it's cheap cider from the corner shop and I'm 18 again. A flurry of excitement tingles through me. Graham is gonna die when she arrives. But I'll have to control my jealousy, or I'll fuck it up. The bell rings, and the intrusion makes me drop the bottle. I mop up the tension and take a tissue to the champagne. I open the door. Tara has gone full out and is standing in a raincoat with a red bow tied in her curls. I called Graham over and she winks. "Happy birthday. I'm your present." His eyes widen in shock. And I think to myself, "You did this, so make it work." Clasping her hand in mine, I lead her upstairs, and Graham trails behind. In the bedroom, to get past the awkwardness of the situation, I pull her to me and kiss her full on the lips. It isn't how they tell you. It isn't softer and sweeter. It feels just the same. I undo her coat, and her body trembles with excitement. Naked, she is stunning, yet vulnerable, fragile. An overwhelming sensation to save her consumes me. Graham approaches her, and it's as if I'm looking through a camera lens. The room feels distorted, the walls distant, the figures too near. I crave to stand in front of her. Act as a barrier, protect her. But is it her I want to free, or the mirror image of me? "Ronnie," Tara says, taking my hand and placing it on her breast. She nods, giving permission. She wants this. "Come on then, get undressed, birthday boy," I say to Graham. He doesn't need any more encouragement. Pushing her down onto the bed, I run my hands up her smooth, tanned body. With slow flickers of my tongue, I tease her nipples erect. I marvel at how different they are from mine. Short, dark and thick. She's not me. Graham kisses her, and soon her low moans excite me too. And I whisper, "You're such a dirty girl." "I am,"
she says, voice hoarse with lust. Graham parts her legs, then with his eyes fixed on mine, he thrusts and enters her. Opening the back door, I grab one of Tara's cigarettes. If there's ever a time to lapse, it's tonight. I sit down on the stone step, wrap my red kimono tightly around me, light up and inhale. Graham and Tara are upstairs still at it, but I need a break and some air. Footsteps pad behind me across the kitchen floor, and Tara taps me on the shoulder. Her face is weird, all mushy and soft, and her lipstick is smudged on her mouth. I guess she gave him a blowjob.
"You okay, Ronnie?"
she asks, lighting a cig. "Yeah, I'm good,"
You?
I've had a fucking ball. But why are you down here on your own?
Oh, I just thought I'd leave you both to have fun, and I needed a drink.
She sits beside me for a minute, exhaling smoke rings into the cold air. We watch them rise and disappear. Then her hand reaches for mine.
Ronnie, you do know I don't fancy Graham, don't you?
He's nice, but he's just not my type.
It's you I wanted to sleep with. I have since I met you.
What do I do with that information?
I lean over, kiss her. Graham walks in, a cheesy grin spread across his face.
Well, ladies.
I fucking hate being called ladies. Just call us by our names.
I've had the best birthday ever.
What a night.
Tara, thanks so much.
He opens the fridge and grabs a beer and a pie that has been there for some days. I don't tell him that it's probably gone off. Then he walks over, bends and plants a kiss on the top of my head.
I'm Ronnie. You're amazing. I've never met anyone like you before.
I've not either,
because I've no idea who I am anymore. How far will I go to win this game?
Chapter 17. Nikki, Blackpool. Screaming, I jump onto the sofa. Gio runs downstairs in his pants. The baseball bat he keeps hidden under the bed is held high above his head.
Is it the daddy with the longer legs? I kill him, Nikki. I kill the little devil.
He swings the bat and searches the air, just missing the lampshade that hangs from the ceiling.
There's something horrible in the fridge. It's freaked me out.
In the fridge? How did it go there?
I don't know. Just go get it, Gio.
Who put it there, Nikki?
I don't know. God's sakes, can you just go get it?
Come, Nikki. Come. I go check out the situation.
We'll be dead by then. Gio moves so slow when he's checking out anything.
Nikki, nothing bad in fridge.
Then where is it?
How do I know? I no see it.
Christ, I'm going to have to go back myself and show him. How in the hell can't he see it? It was the same when he couldn't find his socks the other day. Stay there, I'm coming through, I shout. I can't understand it. I saw it just a minute ago. A huge slimy thing with bulbous eyes, staring at me when I went in to get butter for my toast.
Gio is standing in the corner, the baseball bat hidden behind his back.
Gio?
Yeah?
Where did it go?
He jumps forward, and I fall and crash against the wall. In his hand is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. I run back to the living room.
Nikki, you want some de pulpo?
What the hell? It's disgusting.
He laughs and I throw a cushion at him.
Don't you ever bring octopus into the house again, Gio, and disinfect that fridge.
Oh, try the tiny piece. Maybe a leg.
I shiver at the thought of that slimy texture anywhere near my mouth.
No, I'm away to get ready for our meeting.
Watch out for the monsters.
He shouts, and I laugh, despite myself. He's such a big kid. The space is perfect, just the right size for 8 tables, and we could even put a pizza oven at the back. I already imagine Gio swanning about in the kitchen with his chef whites. The walls are dark sage, but we'll brighten them up with Italian red and put little lamps on the tables. And the location is perfect. Right opposite the sea and a short walk from the pleasure beach. I love it. It's everything we've been looking for over the past few months. Except for one thing. The rent is too high.
What do you think, Gio?
How much?
I blanch at his abruptness, but the estate agent smiles.
Just the same as it was last time you asked, Mr. Amato. It's a very desirable location and such a good customer base.
You take the 5,000 off. I pay cash now.
I blush at his reply. He's already asked twice and been refused. I want it too, but he's making us look desperate and, of course, she doesn't agree. I've other viewings coming next week, but I'll hold for 48 hours. If you find the 5,000, it's yours. That's the best I can do.
I find it,
he replies. Fantastic. I look forward to doing business. You won't regret it. She's a cash cow for sure.
Gio and I walk along the prom, ducking and diving through tourists with their Kiss Me Quick hats and arms full of candy floss. The smell of fish and chips dusts the air, and Gio is as high as the coloured kites flying from the sandy shore.
Nikki, a dream had come true. I ask my cousin. He work for us. He do the dishes. He good man. And my uncle, he give me the money. It's no problem. We get this. Not to worry about. We have our restaurant tomorrow. My bella Nikki, we do it.
He lifts me and twirls me around.
That's what we call it. We call it Bella Nikki, the best Italian restaurant in Blackpool. You like, yes?
I laugh. Yes, I love it. And guess what? I love you. He gasps, lets his knees buckle and pretends to faint.
You love me. How can it be? Long time now. I be love you, but me, I wait to say, in case I chase you away. You take the long time, my bella Nikki.
Wrapped in each other's arms, both of us so excited for the future, we kiss. I can't wait to tell my mum. Where the hell is he? He said he was going to see his uncle before work, but that was hours ago. And he still isn't home. It's noon, and we start work at 1. He hasn't even eaten or showered yet. He could have phoned and said what was happening, instead of letting me sit here and worry. What if he didn't get the money? What will we do then? I can't bear to lose the restaurant. It means so much to both of us, and Gio will be devastated. I rip the tab from a lager can and check the phone is working. It is. So, no excuse not to ring. Maybe he isn't even seeing his uncle. Maybe he's off with some girl. Well, I'll not be here when he comes home. Stuff him, and the job too. Hey, Angie, how you doing? I thought I'd give you a phone. I'm kind of busy just now, Nikki. Oh, okay. Sorry. It's fine. It's just I've got the girls around. It's Rachel's birthday, so we're having drinks, then heading out for lunch. The girls laugh and giggle in the background as they sing along to some daft song. Probably drunk already. I swig my lager. I can't believe they haven't invited me. Bitches.
Are you there, Nikki?
Sorry, it's hard to hear over the noise.
Yeah.
You could have come too, Nikki. You know, it would have been nice to have been invited, I guess.
You were, Nikki. You're always invited. But you always say no to everything. Ever since you and Giovanni got together, we never see you anymore.
Yeah, whatever, Angie. I gotta go. Gio's just made lunch. I hang up, crush the lager can and throw it in the bin. Bloody bitches, the whole lot of them. And Angie was the biggest bitch of them all. What's wrong with spending time with your boyfriend? They're jealous, that's all. It was different when they had boyfriends and I was sat on my own. But then, I remember it was Becky's birthday last week. I'd said I was going, but didn't, because I hadn't wanted to leave Gio on his own. And the time before that, the girls were going to a new cocktail bar in town,
and I turned that down too. Maybe I'd said no a lot lately, after all. But then, that's what you do when you've got a boyfriend, right? There's no point going out partying if you already have your guy, and Gio hates when I'm hungover and dying in bed. The door slams and he walks in, shoulders slumped, head down, and body bent, as though shriveled to half his size. He collapses into the sofa, and it sighs with his weight. I jump up in response. "What's going on? Where have you been?" I demand. He draws his hands through his hair and shakes his head.
"I feel very bad, Nikki."
"Why? What's wrong? Are you ill?" He mumbles something and I ask him to repeat it, but he walks around pulling at his hair. "What's wrong with him? Has his uncle died or something? I've never seen him like this before. Gio, speak to me. What's wrong?"
"My uncle, he no have money, Nikki. He say he no can give me."
My eyes water, but I won't cry. It's just the shock of the disappointment. Gio had been so sure.
"But it's not the end of the world. Okay, I love the restaurant, but there will be other places, other times. He doesn't need to get so upset over it. We'll just work harder and save more. Oh my God, Warwick, we're late." Gio slumps to the floor.
"I no feel well. I feel the faint."
He's pale, and his brow looks clammy and hot. I rush to the sink to get him a glass of water.
"Gio, what's wrong? Have you got pain?"
"My uncle say there is horse. His friends say it will win."
"Horace?"
"We need money for restaurant, Nikki. I put money on horse to win."
"You bet on a horse? What money, Gio?"
"I think I do this. We get big money. Enough to buy everything we need. Make the place nice. Do new sign, buy new tables."
A wave of nausea passes through me, and I have to sit down.
"The bastardo, the horse, it lose."
"What an idiot you are. Did you lose all your wages?"
"There's nothing at all wrong with him. He's just feeling sorry for himself. I could kill him. How could he be so bloody stupid?"
"I know, breathe. I know, breathe."
"How much, Gio?"
"Phone, ambulance. I need go hospital."
I stand up. Surely not. I rush through to the bedroom and grab the stool from the dressing table. Standing on it, I reach under the box that sits atop the wardrobe. I can't find anything. My hands scramble around. Nothing.
"Where's the bank card, Gio?"
"I no can breathe, Nikki. You no understand."
"Where's the bank card?"
I was try get restaurant, make you happy."
"Gio, how much is left?"
He sobs.
"It all gone."
"Hello, Mum. It's me."
"Are you okay, hen?"
"I'm fine, but I'm coming home."
"When?"
"I'm going to catch the train. I'll be there in about 4 hours.
"Okay. See you soon. Keep safe. Don't talk to anyone. I'll make Irish stew for dinner, your favourite."
I sit down on the train and bust into tears. What a fool to trust him. What will I do now?